This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. It's 7:35. The West Virginia University Board of Governors spent more than 2 hours in executive session yesterday, but didn't come to a final decision about who to name as the school's interim president. Beneduccio reports.
The Board of Governors will meet again tomorrow and will continue the discussion, as well as finalize procedures for the national search for a full-time replacement for President Jim Clements, who is taking the job at Clemson University. John Bolt is with WVU University Relations News.
As Chairman Daley has said, this is perhaps the most important decision that these board members will make. And it is perfectly appropriate for them to take as much time as they feel they need to make the wisest decision possible.
Recommendations for both an interim and permanent president will go before the West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission on Friday. Of course, there's always a chance the board won't make a decision tomorrow, but Bolt says as of now, discussions seem to be moving smoothly.
And it is still our plan and anticipation, as I understand it, to be able to present to the Higher Education Policy Commission on Friday the name of an interim president, as well as the process, both of which HEPSI has to approve.
James Clements has been WVU's president since 2009. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Beneduccio in Morgantown.
This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:37. Partly sunny skies today. It'll be mild with temperatures in the 50s and 60s, becoming cloudy overnight with a chance of rain after midnight. Drizzle and fog are possible in the Potomac Highlands tonight. It'll be warm with temperatures in the 40s and 50s. Cloudy with rain likely by Thursday afternoon, temperatures remaining in the 50s and 60s.
Support provided by State Electric Supply Company, your full-line electrical supply distributor, online at stateelectric.com.
Seventy-two years ago, on December 7th, 1941, the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, and the United States was drawn into World War II. William Sherman Beard of Hillsborough, West Virginia, was 19 at the time. About a year later, Beard was at the agricultural school at West Virginia University when he enlisted in the Army Air Force. He was eventually sent overseas at the end of 1944, where he saw combat flying B-24s over Europe. Beard recently talked with Traveling 219's Dan Schultz about his experiences in that war.
Well, we flew out over the Adriatic or up the Adriatic or up across Italy and across the Alps. We hit Yugoslavia, Czechoslovakia, Austria, Hungary, even as far up as Poland. Of course, northern Italy, we pounded northern Italy pretty good. The Brenner Pass was a rough, you got busted up good over the Brenner Pass. Well, I was with the 459th Bomb Group in the 756 Squadron, which was based about, if you look on a map and see Foggia, we were south of Foggia in what they call the Foggia Flats, and there was a number of Air Force bases that was covered up with units of the Air Force. So that's where we wound up. That was in Italy, yeah, in the southern part of Italy. The old B-24s, I don't know whether people know what they are or not, what they were, but they were four-engine aircraft. The engines were 1,200 horsepower each. The old things, I think, had about 110-foot wingspan on them. The crew for a B-24 was 10 people. That was a pilot and co-pilot, a navigator, and a bombardier. And then a six-man crew, radio operators, gunners, that sort of thing. There were four turrets on it that had 250 caliber machine guns in each one of them. They weren't all that easy to fly. They were built, well, they were built really to destroy property and kill people. and without any thought of comfort for the crew. That was the least of the things of it in it. They were noisy. They were cold when you went up high. They were hot when you were down low. There was no power steering or anything like that. You had to manhandle them. Fighters were not our problem, really, at that time. That's, of course, this was the end of the war. Flak was, because the Germans pulled all the guns back with them. The targets were targeted with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of guns. A lot of times you'd see ahead of it, it would just be black over a target where they're protecting that target. It would just be black, and then you'd see planes go inside it, go out of sight in it, and then you'd go in it. 28 of us would airplanes that go at a time, but we would meet up with hundreds of airplanes in the air. There'd be a string as far as you could see in the distance, and sometimes the law was that if you think you're in too close, just cut it in half and move in a little closer. Sometimes it was wingtip that was over top of wingtip. And the guys that run the back, they were sucked up until they could almost shake hands with the tail gunner in the next plane. And that's the way we flew. And occasionally, when we hit places like Munich that were more to the west of Germany, we would maybe see aircraft that was coming from England. We wouldn't get very close, but we realized that that's where they were coming from. I think we were maybe not the best crew. We probably were the luckiest crew. And, of course, we got holes in our aircraft and chunks knocked off of it. And a couple of close calls for a couple of crew members, my navigator, Tony. Up in the navigation department, there was a window, they called it a bubble window, that was kind of a bubble that you could stick your head out so you could look down. And he just pulled his head out of that window when they blew it off and kind of blew a lot of plexiglass around on his, tore up his papers and stuff, but he didn't hurt him any.
That's Sherman Beard. He eventually settled back in Pocahontas County on his family farm, where he continues to live today. This story was produced by Dan Schultz of the Traveling 219 Project, a production of Allegheny Mountain Radio, with support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the West Virginia Humanities Council, and AmeriCorps Vista. To learn more, visit traveling219.com. In Charleston last night, Governor Tomlin and the First Lady celebrated the state capitol's annual Joyful Night, featuring high school musicians, a reading of "'Twas the Night Before Christmas," and the lighting of not one, but two Christmas trees. Here's what the event sounded like.
Stockings were hung by the chimney with care in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there.
The children were nestled all snug in their beds while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads.
And Mama in her kerchief and I in my cap had just settled down for a long winter's nap.
Thank you. go and spread the gospel till everybody knows. Tell me what you put on this morning.
I put on the armor of God.
I wanna know, what did you wear this morning?
I put on the armor of God.
I put on my breastplate of righteousness.
The helmet of salvation.
I'm a soldier in the army of the Lord. Of the Lord.
As the lights on these trees shine bright from this night forward, may they remind us throughout the coming weeks of the many blessings we have to be thankful for. Now let us celebrate as we light up this wonderful tree.
A drum roll, please.
To see photos of the event and a full list of the groups you just heard, visit our website, wvpublic.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. We're interested in your comments. You can send them to feedback at wvpublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at WV Public News and find us on Facebook. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ben Aduccio. Our director is Bob Powell. I'm Beth Voorhees.